Celebrated youth for the fall. You were packaged good intentioned and hung them on the wall. Go to watch you grin. So much blood on your hands. Said you'll understand one day. I finally understand.
To the Insomnia Stream, Flight 1771 edition. I'm your host, of course, Devin Stack. Hope you're all doing well this weekend. Spring is in the air, at least out here. It's warming up in other places, though. I was talking to someone in Wisconsin the other day, and they said it was in the 70s. So if it's in the 70s in Wisconsin, it can't be that bad, right? All right, it's got to be lightening up a little bit. Well, I'm about to put a damper on that mood. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? I guess I could talk about stupid Iran shit. It's kind of weird that I'm just kind of bored of it. I'm kind of bored with world. I guess that's how it was going to happen, right? That's how World War III would happen, is we would just be bored of it. We would just be like, wake me up when there's a mushroom cloud. You know, until I see a mushroom cloud, I'm just kind of like, let's see a nuke, like one, Been hearing about these things my whole life. I want to see one of them go off. I don't even care which side gets it at this point. I just want to see it go off. People saying Netanyahu's dead. I don't know. I don't think he's dead. Maybe he's dead. Wouldn't be a bad thing if he was dead. My pop filter isn't out there. I wonder if I was plosiving all over the place. Not that it helps much. Anyway, we're gonna forget all of the nonsense of 2026. We're gonna forget all the nonsense that's going on in 2026, because funny enough, to illustrate my point that this shit just never stops, we're gonna go back in time. We're gonna go back in time to a simpler time, you would think. But actually not. A romanticized time. That's the thing. You know, just... the stage two cancer... Well, I guess stage three. We have stage four now. We're going to go back to stage three cancer. Advanced. Advanced stage three cancer. All the way back to December 7th, 1987. Yeah, much of the same worries were plaguing Americans at that time. In fact, Russia was the big baddie. December 7th was when Gorbachev went to America. This is December 8th. This is the next day, I believe. At the welcoming ceremony at the White House with Reagan there. I think they played the old Russian national anthem. I don't know what they have now, but this is, I doubt it's as good as this one. The Soviet one is just, it's a good national anthem. Cannons firing as it plays is a nice touch. I mean, it's just, it goes hard, especially if you can find the version by the Soviet military choir. I don't know what it's called, but it's the military choir. It goes hard. It makes you feel like you have a shitty anthem when you listen to it. You're like, damn, why do we have that? I don't know what the Russian one is now. Anyway, so you had that going on. So people worried about World War III, people worried about Russia, and Gorbachev, you know, coming in there. There was always this, you know, this little tango. You also had, this was the beginning of the first intifada with the people in Gaza getting mad finally at all the problems that they've had with Israelis. So that didn't really change. First intifada started on December 7th, 1987. So, you know, same kind of shit. Same kind of shit. But meanwhile, you know, as much as this stuff was all going around the world, just like today, Americans were preoccupied. You know, this was the number one movie on December 7th, 1987.
Touchstone Pictures presents Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, Ted Danson.
Jack!
Whew, Angela! Whew, boy, you look different. What happened?
I'm dressed.
That's it.
Three incredibly eligible men hoping to meet some incredibly perfect women.
So many women in so little time.
Now, at last, they're about to find that one girl who will sweep them off their feet.
That's a baby.
It's a baby.
Of course it's a baby.
It's your baby.
No, it's not my baby. It's Jack's baby.
The child doesn't look anything like me. I have more hair.
I want to see the way you three big guys handle this one.
I had to go to three different places, buy four different kinds of formula, two different kinds of diapers.
Ah, yes, it's the light touch feminism. Oh, men think they're so powerful and strong, but let's see them try to raise a baby. Look at it. Three men put together can't do what one woman can do, even though in the story, a woman abandoned the baby. So I don't know. But the idea that like, oh my God, you think you have it bad? Well, if you combine forces between the three of you, you couldn't handle what one woman can do. So yeah, you had this kind of movie going on TV, the number one shows on December 7th, 1987.
It might be the best Cosby ever as Vanessa goes too far and Dad says,
I want the boy.
Then Different World rocks with the first musical protest. And on Cheers, Sammy tries to take a mother-daughter fantasy to the limit.
Why is my voice so high?
And Dear John finally hits pay dirt. A wild new night Thursday.
Oh, look at that. So, mixture of degeneracy and black people are just like us propaganda. From an actor who is, I believe, currently drugging and raping women at the time that this is airing. And selling Jell-O, I'm pretty sure. So you had, you had propaganda on TV telling you to eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Feminism creeping in. Black people are just like us. Look, he's a doctor. He's a doctor. He delivers babies. The number one song on the charts.
Ooh, baby, do you know what that's worth? Ooh, heaven is the place on earth. They say.
I mean, it's kind of a song about fucking, but at least she's not talking about wet ass pussy. So it's, yeah, it's a little, a little less in your face about it. So, that's 1987. That's December 7th. A day that'll live in infamy. December 7th, 1987. So now that we're back in time, I want you to imagine that you're in California in, which I think I was in December 7th, 1987. You're in California, and these are you see commercials like this on TV for an airline that does not exist anymore.
There's an airline up here with comfortable five across seating on every flight. It's not this one. It has six across seating. Not this one. It's too crowded. This one. Uh-uh. And certainly not these. Only one airline in the West gives you five across seating on every plane in the sky. PSA. So why sit still for anything less comfortable?
Catch our smile. PSA.
And you're like, wow. You know, I'm going to take a flight on that airline. They paint smiley faces on the planes. They paint smiley faces on the plane, Pacific Southwest Airlines. And they're a good deal. They're cheap, kind of like today's Southwest Airlines, right? They're like the bargain airline. And there's smiley faces on the planes.
This is the state, California. This is the unofficial state bird, PSA. These are the people, millions of them. Every day, a lot of them leave home. Some fly south, some fly north. One airline with over 200 flights a day flies more of them around California than any other. At PSA, our job is to keep them smiling. We do our job.
PSA gives you a lift.
Oh, tee-hee-hee. I think, you know what? I could use a lift. I could use a lift. Because as it happens, I'm in LA and I need to go to San Francisco. So naturally, you get a ticket with PSA. You go down to LAX. There's LAX in 1987. Go to LAX. And you get on board with this crew. Flight 1771, LA to San Francisco. It's a quick flight. It's barely an hour. You have Captain Greg Lindemood in the captain's seat in the cockpit, along with James Nunn. They're both very experienced pilots. Thousands and thousands of hours. You had some other employees of the airline on board. John Conte, who was a service agent who was flying to a different service desk. You had some flight attendants. It's a small flight, so, you know, not a bunch, but, I mean, three. You had Julie Goetzman. You had Deborah Neal and Deborah Vulitzoglis, something like that. And the flight has 43 people, including the crew, on board. So you get through security, go through, this is back when security was a little more lax. This is pre-9/11. So, you know, lots of people are able to go through. You don't have to have a ticket. You get up to the plane, get on board, you sit down, you buckle up. This is the plane here. It's a small British-made airline. Small British BAE 146 commuter jet. So there you go. It was a modern jet for 1987. It was supposed to be much quieter. Much quieter. See a little smiley face there? Look at that little smiley face on the front. So you're about to take off. It's 3:36 in the afternoon. That's the exact jet you're on board. And at 3:36, you depart LAX en route to San Francisco. You should be touching down and... yeah, like about an hour. You reach cruising altitude, or at least I don't know if this is like normal, but this is what the altitude they were at. They were at 22,000 feet. There's a little bit of turbulence. Just a little bit, though. Nothing too crazy. All the same, Captain Lindemood was wanting to know if he should expect more turbulence or if it was going to settle down. So he calls in to the air traffic control to ask about the turbulence. Now, as you have probably determined by now, something bad happens. Spoiler alert, something bad happens. And you're going to know for sure something bad happens. I'm going to stretch it a little bit longer. Something bad happens. It's too late. I already told you that. He radios in and says, "Center, PSA 1771. Any reports on the ride ahead? We've had a little continuous light chop." They respond. It's in the recording. It's kind of garbled, but it sounds like he's basically saying, "Nothing to worry about," or it's downplaying it. But it's kind of garbled, hard to understand. Moments later, you hear, "We got a problem. We've had a gun fired on board the aircraft." To which air traffic control replies, "Beg your pardon, sir?" And the airplane replies, "Repeat, we've had a gun fired on board the aircraft." Air traffic control replies with, "Okay, do you want to go to Monterey? Could you make it there, sir?" The reply is kind of garbled. You hear, "Trying, get lower." The plane then does a nosedive. In less than 2 minutes, it goes straight into the ground, impacts the ground at a force of 5,000 Gs. Here's an animation that kind of demonstrates the nosedive. Just straight down, straight at the ground. At full speed. Essentially, almost vaporizing the aircraft. This is a map of where it took place. It was in a remote cow pasture west of Templeton, right off the 46. This is a eyewitness explaining what he saw.
It was going at a high rate of speed. Looked like a dart just diving to the ground.
When it finally hit the ground, it made a hole over 30 feet deep, a crater over 30 feet deep, and that's pretty fucking deep. And there were no dead bodies because everything was obliterated. The debris field was littered with light materials like papers. There were papers everywhere. And that's because they suspect that when it hit the ground, the force of the impact, at the moment that they impacted, the structural integrity of the plane basically just went to pieces. And everything that was lightweight, like papers, were blown sky high, flew up into the air. And all the heavy stuff, you know, just embedded into the ground or just got, you know, totally unrecognizably smashed to bits. So immediately recovery efforts began. And they wanted to know what had caused this. The flight controller contacted the FBI, especially once they saw what had happened, and let them know that there was some talk of a gun. The FBI showed up and began to look at the scene, and they tried to find the flight data recorder. Now, unfortunately, they did find the flight data recorder, it's censored all the shit. There's someone right now trying to get or at least the last update was from a few months ago. But this was the initial response was, in fact, initially they didn't want to give anything. And then because they said, well, we don't know that everyone in this, you have to prove everyone in the recording is dead before they'll give any recording. He's like, dude, they were on a jet that got vaporized. Like, everyone's dead that's on that recording. And so they said, okay. And they replied with all the voices censored out. But from what I understand, it's because of the damage done to the recorder. It's really difficult to hear any of the voices anyway. What you can hear is the nosedive taking place. Here's some of the audio. It's a little eerie, But this is after the nosedive has begun. You can hear the engines whining. You can hear the air whizzing past. You can hear metal shaking. You can hear the hull kind of, you know, maybe even coming apart a little bit. So this is a portion of what they did release. Those are also, you hear the alarms going off. It was also said that they ended up breaking the sound barrier because there is an issue with the recording at the end. They think that almost right before impact, the plane actually broke the sound barrier and then impacted again with over 5,000 G's of force. Just astronomical forces on the human body. The largest piece of human that they found was a hand, and that was it. They were able to piece together little bits of damaged tape and come up with a more complete picture as to what happened. And again, there's no full transcript, and a lot of it is I'm looking at like news reports, but you look at the actual report that was released, and a lot of it's kind of censored out and stuff. But what you're able to get out of this is, first you had the report calling in to air traffic control, asking about the turbulence. And almost immediately after he asked about the turbulence, there's a gunshot sound. Moments later, there's a second gunshot sound. Then you hear a male voice saying, "That's a gun." And that's either the pilot or the captain, they're not sure. And then the response from the other person in the cockpit is, "Yeah, I know." And then you hear most likely the captain say, "Tell him we've got a problem." Then you have the radio into air traffic control that says, "Yeah, we have a problem. We've had a gun fired on board the aircraft." Air traffic control says, "Beg your pardon, sir." PSA 1771 says, "Repeat, we have a gun fired on board the aircraft." Air traffic control says, "Okay, do you want us to go to Monterey, or do you want to go to Monterey? Could you make it there?" PSA 1771 replies with, "Trying, get lower." And then you hear a door opening sound. You hear a distressed female, most likely one of the stewardesses, say, "Captain." And then this is where it gets mushy. Some of the reporting is, and it's not, the transcripts available don't contradict this because it just says unintelligible. But the reporting says that the exchange was, the woman says, "Captain, do you have, or we have a problem." And then one of the pilots or the captain says, "What problem?" And then a male voice says, "I'm the problem." Then there's a third gunshot sound and a fourth gunshot sound. At which point air traffic control is then heard saying, 1771, descend at your discretion to 10,000. Then there's a fifth gunshot sound. At that point, you hear the door to the cockpit smacking around, and then you hear basically what we listen to with the increased airspeed, alarms going off, and then you hear a sixth gunshot sound. Then you hear wind, static, distant voices, and then the recording ends. And again, all that stuff, the distant voices and all that stuff, I couldn't hear. I heard a little bit, but you could just barely, honestly, if I wasn't into ham radio and I wasn't used to like picking out voices out of noise, it's not nothing. If I played it, it's just, you barely hear like the hint of maybe a voice. It's not like you hear screams or any kind of intelligible words or anything like that. So now the FBI understands that at some point there was a gun on board, someone got shot or piecing it together. They're not sure exactly what the hell was going on, but they immediately zeroed in on David Burke. And the reason they immediately zeroed in on David Burke is because they were racist and he was the only black on board. And no, obviously that's not why. What happened was he was a former employee of PSA who had just been fired. We'll get into some of that here in a moment. He had just been fired and he had recently borrowed a gun from another employee of the airline. And that employee, when he saw what happened, called into the FBI and said that I think he was the guy with the gun. They found the gun, or at least what was left of the gun, and they were able to, there was a bit of finger, like a tiny bit of finger pinched into the gun. And they were able to unwrap the bit of finger. And this is before DNA testing. So they couldn't just take a DNA sample and try to figure out who it was that way. They actually had to uncurl this bit of skin that was smashed into the gun and try to lift the fingerprint from it. They were able to lift a fingerprint, or at least obviously a very partial fingerprint. And with that fingerprint, they were able to track it back to this guy, David Burke, whose fingerprints were on file, not just because he worked for the airline, but because he'd had some run-ins with the law, which we'll go into in a second. So they now knew that most likely David Burke had caused this incident. They found the gun, or the gun that was found was the gun, in fact, that he had borrowed from that other employee. Bits of his finger were in the gun. And so with the flight recorder data and this new evidence, what they pieced together. And another thing they found. They found a barf bag. Like, you know, those bags for flying discomfort. Vomit into this bag. That bag, or one of those bags, among all those pieces of paper that were blown free from the plane, there was a note in his handwriting written to another passenger on that flight. The man who had fired him just a few weeks prior, Raymond Thompson, who was a customer service manager at, I believe, US Air. US Air was in the process of merging with PSA when this was going on. Now the note, trying to find it in my notes. Let's see here. Hold on a second, guys. It's funny because it's written in Black Talk, too. Here it is. Says, hi, Ray. I think it's sort of ironical. Ah, yes. So ironical. Now we end up like this. I asked for some leniency for my family, remember? Well, I got none, and you'll get none. So they expect that what happened here... Oh, where is it at? Here we go. That Burke, knowing that Ray was going to be on that flight, used his old airport employee, or rather airline employee ID, to bypass security, something he was used to doing, which we'll get into that in a moment, to get through security with a gun. He then got on board the plane and wrote the note to Ray. He then passed by Ray, handed him the note, and walked to the bathroom where he got his gun. He then walked out of the bathroom. He shot Ray twice. In fact, they found the seat. I believe it was the seat, I think it was the seat behind him. They actually found the seat behind where Ray was seated, and it had a bullet hole in it because it was a 44 Magnum. So the bullet had gone through him and through the seat behind him. He then walked to the cockpit, shot the two pilots, and then that's four of the shots, four of the six. The third shot, he shot the woman who opened the door to tell the pilots, hey, we have a problem. He shoots the woman. He then shoots the two pilots, and he's got one bullet left, and that doesn't fire until several moments later. And they think what happened there is one of the other employees who were on the plane, one of the other employees of the airline, was a seasoned pilot. And they suspect, obviously there's no way to know, that after the shooting had happened and after Burke went into the cockpit and started a nosedive on the plane, he then guarded the door with his gun, and that final shot was probably a shot into to kill the remaining pilot that was on board that may have tried to go to the cockpit to pull them out of the nosedive. And the logic is, because some people thought, well, maybe he shot himself, but the logic is then his hand probably would not have been holding the gun at the point of impact, and his finger wouldn't have been, bits of his finger wouldn't have been crammed into the gun. So he was probably holding the gun still, guarding it. Of course, at this point, no one would be able to make it there. I mean, the G-forces, it wasn't 5,000 Gs. They weren't experiencing that in the air. That was at the point of impact. But the G-forces from a full speed, straight down kind of a thing, my guess is no one would have been able to get in there anyway and certainly pull out of it. So he most likely shot the remaining pilot and then guarded the door, even though the gun was empty, until the impact. The whole thing only took like 2 minutes. The whole thing took 2 minutes. In that 2 minutes, someone who should not be in our society at all used white people technology. A fucking nigger used white people technology to kill 42 people in less than 2 minutes. 42 people. And it's funny because you've probably never heard of this. You've probably never heard of this. He's one of the biggest mass killers in American history. And you've probably never heard of it. 42. I mean, that's probably some kind of record. 42 people. In 2 minutes. because he got fired. But I'm sure, right, if he was that angry about it, I'm sure that the reason he got fired, it was some unjust thing, right? It must have been that he was fired because he was black. That's probably it, right? That's my guess. Well, let's look into his background a little bit. Now, first of all, he's not even like, as far as, you know, people that should not be in our society, he's not even like a slave black. He's an immigrant black. He's an immigrant black from the UK via Jamaica. Burke was born in 1952 in London to Jamaican immigrant parents. 12 years later, his family moved to Rochester, New York. And his father became a taxi cab driver. Because, you know, we don't have enough of those. We need some more Jamaican taxi cab drivers in New York. While in high school, while he's still a junior, he got a girl pregnant. He had several kids. This was the first. So he's already popping out more negs before he's even out of high school. He gets out of high school. His dad tells him to go to college. He gets in on some diversity thing, but can't hack it and drops out like immediately. He then goes to a training school in Connecticut for airline customer service agents. By 1972, he joins US Air in Rochester as a baggage handler. Sounds about right. These are the kinds of people throwing your luggage around and stealing from it. And in November of 1972, right after getting his job at the baggage handler position, he was, I'm not sure what the details are, because I can find the arrest record, but there's no details on the case. But he was charged with a felony of reckless endangerment. Not sure exactly what transpired there. But first class reckless endangerment, and nothing came of it. The charges were later dismissed. It's not that it was a socioeconomic problem, because he actually did have some money, and he had the job as the baggage handler, but he had some money. We'll get into maybe where some of that money came from. But he and his high school sweetheart that he got pregnant when they were juniors purchased a duplex for $28,000 in Rochester. And around that time, he sued the airline. He sued US Air, saying that he was not getting promotions because he was black. He was not getting promotions because they were racist. Now, this affected his relationship with the airline, because this was the beginning of a lot of these lawsuits. This didn't used to happen. You know, this is the 1970s. This didn't used to happen at all. This was the very, very beginning of black people with Jewish lawyers suing companies because they weren't getting everything they wanted and getting a bunch of money. And companies were freaking out. Companies were really afraid of lawsuits. Now, again, we don't know what happened with that because there's zero reporting on it. There's not a lot of information even in the official federal file that was that was released about what, you know, the result of the lawsuit. But he did sue in 1975. And it wouldn't be the first or last time he complained about race getting in the way of his promotions. From 1981 to 1982, I'm a little ahead of myself there. That's another arrest. 1981, 1982, he gets in trouble for not paying his $100 a month child support to another baby mama. He ends up having several kids. And by 1984, let's see here. There's a lot of charges we have to go over here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This is back in 1975 still. Oh, yeah. 1975, he's charged with assault. Third degree assault. Also, by the way, goes away. And he was charged with a felony. It's hard to read what that is. No, robbery. But same thing. He doesn't go to jail. He apparently robbed something and assaulted someone and doesn't go to jail. This is the complaint about him not paying the $100. He was also charged with petty larceny. And that was in 1984. And shoplifting, pled guilty. And around this same time, the FBI and local officials were investigating him for his involvement with the Jamaican drug cartel. I forget the name of it, doesn't matter. A Jamaican drug cartel smuggling marijuana and cocaine into the United States using his credentials as an airline employee to facilitate moving money and drugs into the country. Now, he was never arrested for that, but he was investigated several times and was mentioned in recordings, wiretap recordings of the Jamaican cartel by name. So they knew that he was involved because they were mentioning that he was involved in their wiretap recordings. This is a news report talking about how he was picked up among 20 other people in 1985 following a 7-month probe by local police. And this is into the cocaine smuggling. See, police were investigating a Jamaican drug cartel in 1985 when Burke's name was heard over the wiretaps. At the time, about 24 people, including suspected kingpin Carl Dandy Martin, who was arrested on drug charges in Boston Tuesday, were charged for their role in trafficking marijuana and cocaine from Jamaica through Miami to Rochester. Also in 1985, police suspected Burke of selling drugs at the airport and investigated him a third time. So he was selling drugs to people at the airport at his airport job. He was smuggling drugs with the Jamaican drug cartel and was being investigated and kept getting arrested for things, but the charges would get dropped or pled down, but it was keeping him out of jail. I mean, whatever it is, we don't know. This is a nice little story. A 33-year-old woman who identified herself as Burke's girlfriend, and we'll get back to this, told police the two had been arguing and that Burke picked her up and drove her around at gunpoint for several hours while they discussed their problems. He then dropped her off without further incident. And so the spokesman who didn't want to be identified, the woman who police would not identify, did not want to press charges. Didn't want to press charges yet again. Didn't want to press charges, but wanted police to know about the incident, the spokesman said. And that's really the story of Burke's life, is he keeps committing crimes and violent crime, and either the charges are dropped or no one's pressing charges and the company keeps catching him doing stuff. Because look, while he's getting investigated for all these drug charges, the airline is being notified. And the airline, terrified of a lawsuit, won't fire him because he never gets arrested for it. And so unless there's a actual criminal charge, you know, conviction rather, they're not going to fire him. So he's allowed to just keep working there as he gets out of all these charges. In fact, he shows up to work wasted. He was a known alcoholic. He would get drunk all the time. He'd go to company parties and get wasted and cause problems. At one point, he showed up to work drunk. It says here, he also recalled one instance in 1986 when Burke came to work drunk. This incident was like actually about a year before the airplane incident. At which point, Blank sent him home, but explained that he placed a report of his incident in Burke's personal file, but removed it in December of 1986 and gave it to Burke. So he shows up to work drunk, and all they do is they, oh, this is going in your permanent record. And then like they're like, oh, never mind, here you go. We'll take this out of your record because, you know, what good is that going to do? Another black man, you know, kept out of getting promotions because of racism. He then, in 1987, or maybe towards the end of 86, but prior to this incident on the plane, yeah, it was right at the end of December, so about a year before he killed 42 people. In December of 86, he told friends that he wanted to escape the police scrutiny in Rochester, because he was getting investigated for all the cocaine smuggling stuff, all of his involvement with the Jamaican mafia, you know, all these other problems he had. He broke up with his baby mama, the one that he had, I think, six or seven of his kids with. And he just wanted to get away. And so because he worked an airline, you know, he could just fly to California, no big deal. And so he decided to live in Los Angeles and work out of the Los Angeles office because US Air now was affiliated with the Pacific Southwest Airlines because of the merger that was taking place. So he was able to just basically transfer from US Air to PSA. So he goes to California and he purchases a condominium in Long Beach. Now here's the other weird thing about this guy. Everyone talks about how he just has money all the time. You know, for a guy that basically works in customer service at an airline, I think his salary was something around $30,000. He's walking around with $1,000 bills he's a meme. He's exactly what, you know, he's nigger rich. He's walking around with tons of money. He's driving, you know, fancy fucking cars. But he's also got tons of cash. It's not just nigger rich, because he at one point gave his dad $30,000 in cash and told him to invest it. And he bought properties. He had like four or five properties. And it was a little weird that someone on his salary could afford that. And obviously, that was coming from all of his drug smuggling money that he was getting with the Jamaican cartel. So here's from another news report. He sold his Rochester holdings when he moved to Los Angeles in December of last year, netting him at least $140,000 in cash. during 1987. At one point, he owned three properties, some of them jointly. Friends said it was typical for Burke, who drove a gold Mercedes and wore a large diamond ring, to have large sums of money in his pocket. At one time, he carried $400,000 cash, his father said. Dressed well and lived well from the profits of his investments, which he said augmented his U.S. Air salary between $24,000 and $31,000. That's why he is puzzled, this is the father speaking, that U.S. Air fired his son after he was allegedly filmed by a hidden camera stealing $69 in receipts from the in-flight cocktail sales. So that's really what got him fired. Amongst all these investigations for selling drugs, for smuggling drugs, the criminal charges he's catching in his personal life, showing up to work drunk, basically just being a full-on nigger. He, even though he's got apparently $400,000 cash that his dad said he's walking around with on camera, like it's literally on camera, he is seen on an airplane going through. They have this, it's not a cash register, but it's like a little cash box that they use when they sell drinks on the airplane, so that they can give people change. And so it was just like petty cash that was in a metal box that amounted to about $69. And when they saw him on camera stealing the $69 out of the petty cash cart or the drink cart cash box, that was the final straw. That's when they finally had enough and they finally fired this guy. And the funny thing is, even though he had all that money, he still wasn't paying child support. His child support of $100 a month. $100 a month. This guy has cash, all these properties. He's stealing from the airline. And you know that wasn't probably the first time. And he still can't pay his baby mama the $100 a month. So he was let out of the, this is where they arrested him at the location. Even as he left town, there was another Rochester police drug investigation on him, said Rochester Police Chief Gordon Ehrlicher. Burke also was a suspect in an ongoing FBI car theft investigation, the agency said. He was involved with, or at least being investigated with, in terms of his connection to, a Mercedes-Benz car theft ring. So they suspect that the reason he had a Mercedes, it was stolen. He had a stolen Mercedes-Benz that had gone through a chop shop, and they'd changed the VIN number and all that stuff, because he was part of this operation that would steal Mercedes and then put them through a chop shop, make them clean, give them a salvage title or something like that, and then put them back on the market. So this guy's like a full-on criminal. Here's the another report I found. On July 15th, Burke appeared at the State Department of Fair Employment and Housing in Los Angeles. So right after he gets out to L.A., right after transferring over to the new airline, he goes straight to the state government and complains that he is being held back because of his race, that he's not getting promotions. This is in the backdrop, of course, is he just got fired from U.S. Air for stealing out of the airplanes, and not fired, like that apparently let him transfer to the new airline, because that happened in Rochester. He goes to the new airline, and they know about his past. They know about his past because it's like a sister airline. And they still hire him, probably because he's black and they have to fit some kind of quota or something like that. I looked at one of their corporate videos, and they'll just say that their employees were very diverse for 1987 in that corporate video. And he gets hired there for $43,000 a year, which is actually a bump up in pay from what he was making in Rochester, and immediately goes and complains that they're holding him back because he's black. This is the year that he murders 42 people in less than 2 minutes. At that same time, these are more details about his relationship with that woman that he held at gunpoint. So the woman that he held at gunpoint, you know, he's been there. This is 1987. He gets there in the very beginning of the year. By the end of the year, he's murdering 42 people. Sometime during that time, he gets a Mexican girlfriend. Says a month earlier, the 5'2", 120-pound Camacho, which is kind of funny. It's the same last name as the president from Idiocracy. So maybe one of his kids is the future President Camacho. Or no, is it Camacho? I don't remember in the movie. But anyway, representing herself in Los Angeles County's Superior Court, had won a temporary restraining order that barred Burke from coming within 100 yards of her or her home. Burke was 5'10" and weighed about 200 pounds. Camacho sought to order the Burke twice attempted, or order the Camacho sought the order after. Oh, sought the order after Burke twice attempted to strangle her, deliberately damaged her car, tore her clothes, according to court documents. In them, Camacho said, quote, "On the 16th of October, he dragged me out of bed into the living room and tried to choke me. He squeezed my throat until I couldn't breathe and then let go. He tried doing the same thing the following morning." Why is he still there? Why are you still there? "I asked him to take his things and leave. On the 18th, he came back and cut the wire in my car that caused the car to stall out. He admits doing that. Also on the 19th, he returned again and stole the garage remote opener that I left, or opener that left me without access to get in and out of my garage. He cut up a few of my clothes and admitted doing all of the above." So, and this was after police had already gone to his house a couple of times. There was one instance where the neighbor said that while he was yelling at her, he smashed out all the windows in their garage. And then the police were called. So, U.S. Air, it's kind of weird because they say he got fired for the stealing stuff in Rochester. I don't know if this was like an ongoing case and they didn't make the fire, like they suspended him there. And so he went to this other place on the West Coast. It's kind of foggy, but, and because the merger is literally going on during this time period too. So it's hard to know exactly because sometimes they're talking about PSA, sometimes they're talking about US Air. But when they're talking about this was he's fired completely from all airlines. PSA is, you know, part of this. It says U.S. Air fired him on November 19th after a hit. Okay, so maybe the timeline's messy because of all the different. You gotta remember, I had to go through like 30 different news reports, and sometimes original reporting has conflicting stories when there's a breaking news thing going on. So it sounds like he wasn't fired in Rochester. But he came to L.A., transferred, and then he got caught in L.A. with the stealing the money. Stealing $69, his girlfriend Jacqueline Camacho of Hawthorne, California, went to court to obtain a restraining order against him for allegedly choking her. According to an FBI affidavit, Burke flew to San Francisco. Had to cough there. Flew to San Francisco in November and borrowed a .44 caliber Magnum and 12 cartridges from a friend who noted that Burke was depressed. On December 4th, Burke showed up at Camacho's home with the gun and made her and her daughter drive around, saying he got the weapon to scare her into talking with him. And this is the thing, she wouldn't press charges. So literally 3 days, 3 days before this happened, if his Mexican girlfriend had just fucking called the cops and said that he held me at gunpoint, and the longer version of the story is, he drove her and her daughter at gunpoint, drove her around aimlessly, took him back to the apartment, and threatened them with the gun and held them at gunpoint until he eventually fell asleep at like 7 in the morning. And then they were able to get out. But they didn't go to the cops. I wonder if they didn't go to the cops because she's illegal, or, you know, an illegal immigrant, possibly. So that's just days before he does this. November 15th, he was, this talks about how he was arrested. But here's the other thing. He was arrested for stealing the money just a few weeks prior to killing 42 people. And the airline dropped the charges. They dropped the charges. So here's what happened. Here's what we know about what happened. David Burke, a immigrant Jamaican nigger, came to this country, immediately started impregnating women, ended up with, I think I have it here maybe. Oh no, this is his dad saying he's a good boy. I don't believe he's dead. He's too smart. That's why I don't believe it. He's a good boy. That's his dad when the press go to him. This is the funny thing about his kids. Smith said Burke fathered seven children, her three daughters, Lisa, Katrina, and Tamika, a fourth daughter, Sabrina, by Beatrice Burke, and three sons by three other women. But Altamont Burke, that's his dad, said his son had nine children. Smith said Burke told her that he was finally serious about marrying. He said the woman was another U.S. air ticket agent, Jacqueline Holt, whom he had known for several years. So he's going to marry some other person, he said. Smith said Burke, I think Burke's the, it's one of the baby mamas, told her, I'm ready to settle down after having nine kids with, I think, five different women. Anyway, so he shows up, immediately starts acting like a nig. He doesn't have a slavery sob story. You know, he doesn't have socioeconomic problems because he's got all this fucking money from, well, drug dealing and smuggling and stealing cars. He has a normal job. He sues the airline for discrimination. Who knows? Maybe he got a settlement out of that because the same year that he did that is when he bought his first house. Possible settlement out of that. The airline refuses to fire him because they're afraid of some kind of discrimination lawsuit. He buys three or four different properties, gives his dad $30,000 cash. He's got money. He's showing up to work drunk. They don't fire him for it. They even take it out of his permanent record. He's under so much investigation heat, he moves to the other side of the country, to Los Angeles. Within a year, he has a Mexican girlfriend who he has threatened on multiple occasions with a gun, who he has beaten severely. He's smashed out all the windows in her garage. He's vandalized her car, cut up her clothes, choked her out a few times. He then steals petty cash from a drink cart on one of the airplanes, gets caught on camera. The airline drops the charges, so he doesn't have to go to jail or anything like that, but they're finally going to fire him. They're finally going to fire this asshole. And he snaps. When he goes in to meet with Ray Thompson, he tells Ray Thompson that he's going to sue them for discrimination if they fire him. He says that he needs help. He needs rehab. They just need to put him through rehab, keep him employed there, because he's got a family to feed. Ray Thompson, having finally grown some balls, says, you know what? We'll help you find some kind of rehab. We'll actually do that, but you're not working here anymore. We finally had enough. You're obviously smuggling cocaine and shit and doing, all this other shit that over the years you're violent, you're a drunk, you're a psychopath. I don't care. Sue us, I guess. We have a video of you stealing from the drink cart. So if we get into a lawsuit situation, we got this video of you stealing from the drink cart, and that'll get us out of any kind of legal problem. Because we're dropping the charges. We're going to look like the nice guy, and you're going to look like the weirdo. David Burke freaks out. And this is something that he had planned. It's not like he just snapped. He had planned that if things had gone this way, if he got fired, that he was going to kill everyone on an airplane. We know this because he tried to take out several insurance policies on himself, air passenger insurance policies, meaning insurance policy specific to if you die in an airplane crash, you can will, in his case, it was like hundreds of thousands of dollars. He bought like almost $1 million worth of policies that would go to his dad if he died on an airplane just prior to doing this. In fact, one of the insurance policies he bought at the airport the day of. He then used his ID, because that back then they weren't as tight with security. They hadn't taken his ID from him, so he still, even though he was officially fired, he still had like his little name tag thing. He was able to get through security with his gun. He then sat down on the plane, wrote a scary note to try to fuck with the guy that had just fired him, hands him the note, gets his gun out, shoots him, kills a stewardess, kills the two pilots, probably kills another pilot, and in total kills 42 people in less than 2 minutes. And what was the lesson learned? What was the lesson learned by this from society in 1987? Well, I'll tell you, it was hard to find really any kind of news coverage on this at all, aside from the newspapers. There are lots of newspapers, mostly in California, obviously. You have a plane crash in your neighborhood, there's going to be news reports about it. Shockingly, not a lot of information out there about this. It's weird that you can't get the recording. I don't know if that's just the FBI being the FBI or whatever. But one thing you can find is a report discussing this case on national news. It's the only one you can find online. And I don't know, for you and I think the lesson is pretty clear. the lesson's pretty clear that basically Nigs hold the record for mass murder in the United States. Blacks are dangerous people. Immigration of non-whites, it never works out. It's a bad idea. There's lots of lessons wrapped up in this. Never relax. Maybe having diversity quotas is a bad idea. Maybe allowing Jew lawyers to sue your company because you fire a black guy. And all the judgments going in their favor because all the judges are Jewish also. There's lots of lessons here. Lots of lessons. But what was the lesson learned by the American public in 1987?
Country today, employees of Pacific Southwest Airlines, PSA, observed a moment of silence for the victims of Flight 1771. The crash on Monday killed 43 people in Central California. And as NBC's Don Oliver reports, there is even more evidence tonight linking a fired employee to the nightmare scenario of revenge and gunfire.
I know that fate has dealt with them and their loved ones unfairly.
In an airport hangar in San Diego, co-workers at a memorial service for the 8 employees of Pacific Southwest Airlines who died in the crash of Flight 1771.
Howard Nunn, Ray Thompson.
Thompson was believed to be the target of a former airline employee who was thought to have brought the plane down in a volley of gunfire. His name was not mentioned here, but at the crash scene near Paso Robles, the FBI said handwriting on a threatening note found in the wreckage was definitely that of the fired employee, David Burke.
There is no longer any doubt as to who wrote the letter addressed to Ray.
The FBI also thinks it knows how Burke got a gun and bullets by the metal detectors in the PSA terminal at Los Angeles International Airport.
According to an affidavit, the FBI was told by the airline that Burke was allowed to bypass security screening because as an airline employee, he was familiar to the security guards.
The company which provides security here says its internal investigation shows proper FAA procedures were followed. But the general manager of the airport thinks the FAA ought to review its security plan.
Or they may find that if the plan is okay, it's the implementation of the plan which was not. I'm not sure.
This week, a television newsman bypassed security carrying the expired credentials of a former airport food service worker. The former airport employee also retained gate keys.
I feel it's my duty to let the people know that it is not a secure airport. It has a lot of flaws, and we should pay attention to it.
Another memorial service today in Ojai, California. This for Jocelyn Kemp, one of 4 Chevron oil executives to die in the crash. As they mourned, friends and relatives wondered why so many had to die so one man could satisfy a grudge.
It was a security problem. It was a security problem. And yes, I chased down the whole Chevron executive thing. Not everything is a conspiracy, guys. Those are the flights that those people are on. Who would you expect to be on those flights? It's a commuter flight. So the problem is security. And that's really what you end up with. The reason why America doesn't look like the way that it doesn't have the same freedoms that it had even 50 years ago. It's because it's not the same people we had 50 years ago. The reason why 50 years ago you could just walk right onto the tarmac and walk on the plane is because it was white people. The second non-white started interacting with this whole funky airline, the white man learned how to fly kind of technology. That's why we have all this security. That's why we have the security. Non-whites is why we have the security. You know, we often talk about, and not often enough, the financial burden of the white man in America that is imposed on them because of non-whites in their society. And it's almost impossible to calculate. It's almost impossible to calculate. Because not only would you have to calculate the necessary additional law enforcement required just because you have black people, the additional prisons that you need just because you have black people, the additional special education you need just because you have black people, all the lawsuits over the years, the discrimination lawsuits, the billions of dollars that have been spent on that, and like that trickles down, right? Just because some company like US Air or whoever has to give out a few million bucks, it's not like, oh, it's not me. No, it's you. Because that price is rolled into your airline ticket. Added security at airports and everywhere else in the country. All the technology required for anti-shoplifting, surveillance, all this stuff that had to be invented and rolled out, and you're paying for it, and all that gets included in the price of the products that you buy. All the shoplifting that happens, same thing, that gets rolled into the when you're paying for products, that's rolled into the price that you're paying. You're paying for the shit they stole too. When they burn down a city, that gets rolled into the prices you're paying for insurance and for the products that you buy. It's almost impossible to calculate the financial burden of having black people in your society. And not just blacks, other people too. And yet when this happens, the lesson learned is, oh, we don't have enough security. We need more security. Until 9/11 happens. Then we need even more security. Something else caused by non-whites. And that is the story, ladies and gentlemen, of the mass murderer David Burke that you've never heard of. Who, again, probably has a record. That's got to be some kind of record. Killing 42 people in like 2 minutes. Who else has done that? Who else has done that? Now, the funny thing is, so those insurance policies after this happened, his dad tried to cash them in. You know, the dad that said he's a good boy, when he tried to cash them in, he had, according to the report, it just said obviously. He had obviously altered the forms on one of the things. It was he had filled out, because he had filled these out right before the mass murder he committed. So they hadn't fully been processed, but he had altered one of the application forms from 50,000 to five. He had added a zero basically to the policy and tried to alter the premium to make it match what the premium for the $500,000 was. And the insurance company called the FBI and said, this guy's trying to collect on this insurance policy and he altered it to try to get more money. So his dad's no saint either. His dad's sitting there, oh, my son just murdered 42 people. I'm going to get rich by stealing even more money. So anyway, thank you to, did I write that down? This was a recommendation from someone that I might have in my notes. But if I don't, I don't. I might be able to find it though. Let me see here. This is possibly who, what is this from? Antone, I think. Or no. It says Antone, or Antone Oive, I think. That's who recommended that. So yeah, it's crazy. No one talks about this case. Mass murdering world record holder for like mass murder. Well, maybe not world record. But, you know, in terms of just like domestic terrorism, isn't that what you always hear? Oh, white people are the domestic terror threat. I don't think any white guy's ever done anything like this. So anyway, let's take a look at Hyper Chats, shall we? All right, first we'll go to Odyssey. Let me get this nigga off the screen. What should we put on the screen here? Anything fun we can look at? How about the plane? The people he killed. We'll put the plane up. The plane with the smiley face on the front. All right, we got... Let's see here. We got Love and Division, as per usual, on Odyssey.
Hey.
All right, Love and Division says, I've been catching outlaws on replay. The common sense punishment for crimes you guys promote can only happen if certain people don't prevent it. El Salvador was able to stamp out crime because there were only 20 Jewish families in all of El Salvador. Really? I bet they're powerful, though. I'd like to know more about that. I'd like to know more about that. But no, that's what it is. It without Jews, we'd have a lot different justice system than we have today. In fact, it might still be a little just. Look, without Jews, everything would be different in this country. Like, everything would be. If it wasn't for the flood of Jews from Eastern Europe from around the turn of the century, if it wasn't for that, America would look much different today. And then Love and Division again says, once PSA knew they needed to fire Burke, they should have hired a hitman and offed him. Well, there you go. That would have been a cheaper option. That would have been a cheaper option than what ended up, because they lost a plane over it. Lost a plane, a bunch of employees. I mean, you know, the economic costs of not firing him far surpassed the economic costs they would have gotten from firing him. All right, then we go over to Entropy. Rivers of Blood says rumors flying on Netanyahu being killed by an Iranian missile strike, including claims of his recent video messages on AI, or messages being AI generated. I don't completely believe it. What are your thoughts? If he really is dead, will this stop Zog from further escalation, or will someone more radical seek revenge? My understanding, I've seen those rumors. At first blush, it looks like just war propaganda. This is the nonsense stuff that happens during a war where you're hearing all kinds of crazy reports this way and that. I doubt that he's been killed, but it's possible, but I doubt it. If he were to be killed, that you got to remember the whole country is very Zionist. I mean, not every single Jew there is, but most of the Jews, certainly the ones in power, the Likud party runs that country. They are all very, very in line with what Netanyahu wants. So I don't imagine that him dying would make any difference. But yeah, I don't think he's dead either. All right, then we got Devin Stack for Fuhrer. Devin Stack for Fuhrer says, going to catch the replay, but the new show is awesome. Way different dynamic, hearing you as a co-host instead of a guest. And thank you for being unwaveringly based when she says something to show her woman. I don't know what that means. Also, Mike is Sasquatch, Ontario, And I think you cracked the code. I think you cracked the code. And your painting is blurry as hell, but it looks like a Rembrandt. A moot. I don't know. That might be. Let me look that up. It is. I think it is a Rembrandt copy, but let me just make sure if that's the one. Nope, it is not that one. I think it is a Rembrandt copy, though. But it's an old Rembrandt. It's a Rembrandt copy from the 1800s. That's an old. It's a very old painting. From an artist who is famous in his own, not a Rembrandt famous, but famous-ish. But yeah, you cracked the code. You cracked the code on the mic. Oh, so ridiculous. Wait, if you know what it is, yes. It's just like, oh, God, who falls for this shit? Who falls for this shit? Should I let the people in on the secret? Nah, you guys have now you guys have enough clues to really track it down. You'll discover the fun for yourself. All right, then we got Brian M. Oh, speaking of which, there we go. Oh, and Brian M. says, I can't believe my eyes, Devin. I requested this one a year ago. Oh, you did? Yeah, because when I just searched to see like who'd recommended it, and you did. You came up as a result too. You did request this a year ago. Maybe twice, and here it is. You're going to go, you're going to jive. Oh, sorry. Their give. My eyes are watering right now. David Burke, the cursing send-off he deserves in hell. Thank you, Ghost Dog Man. Yeah, you did request this. I don't know if it was both times, but I got when I searched for it, there were two requests. So you were apparently the first one. Yeah, I was surprised. I'd never heard of it because, I was pretty little. So I probably wouldn't have heard of it personally. But I was in California at the time. I mean, I was real little. But it just seems like it's a big deal, right? Like it seems like a big deal that some nig got on a plane, shot it up, and then crashed it full of people. And they never made a movie about it. And look, he was like a shitty guy. I mean, and look, easy movie. You know, you make a movie about some Jamaican drug-dealing psychopath that kills 42 people. Nope, obviously they're not going to. See, that's one of the things that would have changed, too. Without the Jews that came around the turn of the century, you might have had, well, you wouldn't have had him here in the first place, but if he was here, you would have movies about stuff like that, and white people wouldn't be living in the fucking dark about this shit. But, yeah, thank you very much, Brian M. Some of your guys' recommendations are good. Some are pretty good. All right, then we got Gorilla Hands.
White fucking power.
All right, Gorilla Hands says, is it just me or are normies fucking retarded? There's a bunch of them up here cheering and bringing on their replacement. They're protesting ICE because of their hatred for Trump. Also, I would like to send out my hopes and prayers that our fearless leader is alive. Hopefully all those rumors of his death are not true. Well, look, from what I understand, the mask is finally off, right? From what I understand, I've been told that immigration, we already lost. It's just a wedge issue. We need to get past it. We just need to get past it. We just need to get past it and just embrace the universalist Catholic view that as long as you believe in Jesus, you're just as American as anyone else. And so who cares that there's no mass deportations, and who cares? The leftists are actually right. It's cruel what we're doing anyway. So let's just give up on the whole demographic thing, says the gay Mexican. All right, then we got Gorilla Hands again, says, I think Mike is one of your friends that you went up to Canada with that hooked up with a very hairy Canadian woman. Oh, you're wrong. Don't forget to take a look at the Outer Limits episode with Chad being frozen for 30 to 40 years and being awakened to a world which where girl bosses are in charge. I think that one's in my notes still there. And then Gorilla Hands simply says, wait, I think my buttons are fixed now, right? Oh, why is that not working? Hold on. Is it going to work now? It might work.
Focus!
Hey! I just had to restart it. And it works. All right. We got a faggots button again. We got a couple buttons. Look, oh, we got this button, too.
My vey.
They're all jacked up. I don't know why they're all going off the screen. I don't know what happened that made everything start going off the screen. All right. Then we got Minnesotan says, Devin, what do you think of single white males having children via surrogate? I'm coming up on 27 years old and seriously considering it. Well, you think 27 is ancient? Like, oh, it's over for you. You're 27. Oh, you'll never find a womb. Are you a woman or a man? Even at 27, well, you said white males, so you're a man. I mean, find a woman to have kids with at 27. It is far from over for you. If you're 27 is not very old, man. I mean, 27, you got, I mean, don't act like you have all the time in the world, but you, I mean, you have a lot of time. Just don't behave like you have a lot of time. Find someone. I mean, I guess that'd be like a last resort. I don't know what your plan would be. Like, what would you get like a donor egg? Like, I don't like from a male perspective. I mean, I know how women would do it. From a male perspective, what would you do? I'm sure if you have enough money that you could do it that way. But it's a lot easier if you can just go, it's a lot easier to go sperm shopping than egg shopping. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I you got plenty of time, bro. Like you, but get cracking. Try, make it a goal. Make it a goal that before you are 30, make that a priority of yours. Before you're 27 now, before you are 30, you'll have knocked up a chick. Not just be married. That has to happen too. But you'll have knocked up a woman by 30. And if you really and truly make that a white woman, by the way, really and truly make that a goal. Even if there's something horribly wrong with you, I feel like you can make that happen. You have to just make that a goal, though. You have to make that a goal. If you make that a priority and do the fit, like find out what's preventing it. If this is something you've been trying to do, what's been getting in my way? You know, is it something I'm doing? Am I going for the wrong kinds of chicks? Do I have weird expectations or, am I kind of a loser? I mean, not that you're a loser, but like, am I not really financially in a place where I could have a kid, you know? So that kind of, you know, if you can't afford, you can't just be like these nigs that go around, I mean, popping 9 kids out of 5 different women. I mean, I guess you could, but that's usually That's not how K-selected people operate. So if you want a woman that's K-selected, she's going to want you to, you know, have the ability to raise the kid and stuff. If you make that a priority, you can make that happen. Minnesota still has some white people, right? All right, then we got, are you a colonizer, says, following up on your apprehension to label us, or on the label of colonizer, you state that it is too weak and that you have trouble disassociating it from colonists. I chose colonizers because it has been used by non-whites as a pejorative term to create psychological demoralization. It asserts that the mere presence of white people is a form of ongoing aggression against indigenous or non-white populations. According to Rules for Radicals, one of the techniques used is to make the enemy live, and then it stops. You're saying it says 2 out of 6. So I don't know, like, there's more. It's not loading up. Look, I don't really. Here's the thing you're missing. I don't really decide what we call us. You know, like, I don't have the kind of influence where I'm like, I'm gonna start saying colonizer all the time, and then fast forward 5 years and everyone's saying colonizer. I wish I had that kind of influence. But that said, this isn't like a case where, oh yeah, we's gonna call ourselves niggas. You know, like I don't think it works like that all the time. And I don't think that, like I said before, I don't think that shouldn't be central to our identity. Shouldn't be that we go other places and set up shop. I think that's one thing that we're capable of doing that other people have not done. But as I've explained before too, it was a double-edged sword. There's many instances where it probably would have been a better idea if we didn't colonize things, you know, like, India is a good example. So, you know, it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, I get it. You really want this colonizer thing to be a thing. I wish you luck on that quest. I'm not like diametrically opposed to it, but I don't really have, it's not up to me anyway, you know? It just doesn't, from a marketing perspective, and I'll admit I'm going just off gut reaction, but from a marketing perspective, I'm not feeling it. Like if I was in a room full of people and we were brainstorming, right? Like, oh, we got to find the new, which I don't even know why it's necessary, but if we need to find a new, like, label that we can, you know, categorize ourselves with and use as like a term to describe ourselves. And the people were throwing out, you know, different terms. I wouldn't hate colonizer. I'd be like, like it, don't love it. You know, that would be like my response if I was in like a creative room and then someone threw that out. I'd just be like, don't love it. I'm just going, you know, just how it hits me. Like how, what's my initial reaction? And again, like I get what you're saying. And in terms of the philosophy that you've at least previously laid out where, you've talked about how like, oh, we want to go colonize the stars. I get that. Yeah, that's cool. I think we should want to do that. I feel like when we do, we're going to bring nigs with us, though, unfortunately. So, but yeah, it's not up to me anyway. All right, then we got Gorilla Hand says, I have worked with a piece of shit just like this scumbag. My work would never fire him because he would cry racism. Luckily, he dropped dead from a heart attack in his 50s. Oh, there you go. That's a happy ending. All right, then we're going to go over to Rumble. Let's see here. All right. Rumble with a big donut to start off. We got a Real Starfish Prime. Does my big donut button work? It might, if I can find it. Well, I don't know where it is. There it is. Nothing happened. It does not work. Damn it. Does the faggots one still work? Faggots! That still works. Why is the big donut one not want to work? What about this one? Does this work?
$500,000.
Well, that one still works. Well, we'll go with this. All right. Real Starfish Prime says, Professor Stack, I've been listening to your back catalog and have received a lot of value from your work. Certainly more than this donation is giving you. Maybe I'm 2% Ashkenazi Jew. Sorry. Well, you've been very generous, Real Starfish Prime, and I'm glad that you find value in my work. And it's only through the generosity of people like yourself that I'm able to continue to do this. So I thank you for that. And if you were, I would assume if you were Jewish, that you would not have given such a generous donation. So thank you very much, Real Starfish Prime. Then we got the Supreme Rabbi Satan. Says, fuck you. Also, don't Google image search U.S. counties with the most white people per capita. I don't know what that's about. He's talking, says it's an at the Shogun. So I'm not sure what that's in reply to. Then we got Friendly Fash says, it was the Funky Town video I was thinking about. The most horrible thing about it is knowing you can be so mutilated and still be conscious. Fight the death before capture, or fight to the death before capture is the future, or the future is violent. Yeah, I'm not going to expand on that. I don't want to spread that mind poison any more than I already have. Truffle B says, catch you on the replay. Keep them coming. Well, I appreciate that. Blonde Beast, Blonde, the other half of the Outlaws show on Wednesdays at high noon Pacific time on this channel. I got it, right? Says, my dog has cancer and his butthole exploded last week. That's the stage of cancer we have. Well, there you go. We have butthole explosion cancer. Butthole explosion cancer is where we're at right now. In 87, it was pre-butthole explosion cancer. Then we got Yo Jimbo Rockford says, I'm so glad my grandma isn't alive to see the downfall of Bill Cosby. When I was a kid, she was a fan of Fat Albert and loved Mr. Cosby on Captain Kangaroo. Southern white grandmas are sweet and naive. Yeah, they just, you know, so many, it's not just Southern grandmas. So many white ladies are so desperate to see a harmless black man because it, and so are white men, by the way. That show was popular because it was a form of self-soothing. The white people that were increasingly in proximity to black people, their senses were telling them one thing. Their senses were telling them, oh, black people are dangerous and committing crime and murdering people and killing an entire plane load of people because they got fired from a job where they were smuggling drugs and getting drunk and being an asshole. This is bad. This whole desegregation thing might have been a bad idea. And we can't exactly undo it. There's no undo button. When we kind of desegregated, we just assumed it would work. There was no safety net if it didn't. There was no trial period. We just ripped it all up. Threw the pieces in the air and just hope for the best. So if this doesn't work, we're kind of fucked. And so television shows that told people, oh, no, it's working. Look, a black doctor. Look, a black doctor. Look, his whole family, they're just like you. Look, we got a couple spinoffs. Look, all these black people, they're basically white people, only they get discriminated against. That's really the only difference. They're white people that actually, their life is a little harder because of evil racism. And but yet they overcome and they manage to achieve everything and more, you know, than a white person could. So, you know, it's going to work. It's going to be a little slow. What would you expect? I mean, obviously, right? Obviously, it's going to take a little time. You can't just expect them to magically become white people overnight. For them to magically become white people, it takes a few decades. But it's going to happen. Look at Bill Cosby. Don't you want some Jell-O right now? Isn't that what? I mean, you come on, have some Jell-O. Have some Jell-O. Does that make you feel better now? Jell-O. How about the little pudding pop? Is that good? You like the pudding pop? Is the pudding pop good? I like the pudding pop. Yeah, it is what it is. Serbian Bull says, I'm from Wisconsin, and it was 70 for just a day. Okay. We're looking at 2 feet of snow coming back right now. Well, all right. Well, you had a day. Since we're talking flights, check out Midwest Express, which most of my family worked for. Okay. I'll copy that into my notes. So who knows, right? Who knows? Maybe this will be a good one. Where are my notes? I have way too many tabs on my notepad now. There we go. All right. Then we got Tyler W05 with a big dono. Maybe the Christmas dono button works. And it does not. It doesn't. Why is this not working? I mean, let me see if I can manually trigger it. Find it in my million fucking clips thing here. Wonder why it's not working.
Children, today we'll be reading the best Christmas ever. Our story begins with
The Magic Negro.
Christmas tree on Christmas.
It's a Christmas! Motherfuckers!
Where did the snowman go?
Christmas ever. All right. Tyler W05 says, as always, Devin, I hope you're doing well. My friend Nick just recently became a regular listener, and today was his wedding. Based babies incoming. Thank you for your work, Mr. Stack, from us both. Well, and congratulations, Nick. Hopefully you are going to make based white babies. And we need more of those. See 27-year-old guy before whose name I already forgot. Sorry. Yeah, you have some time. You have some time, man. Well, I don't know. Maybe this guy's 23 and you're really behind, but you got time. All right, we got Astralis. Astralis, 25 non-Mexican. All right. Astralis 25 non-Mexican says, I can imagine a Jamaican immigrant descendant bringing an airliner down. I worked in Jamaica for a year, maybe a little more. Crazy place and some people. This guy was obviously crazy. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of insanity, it seems like, that comes from Jamaican. The guy that was shooting people on the train, the black guy that just went ape shit and killed all those people on the train. Apparently this is like in Jamaica, it's part of the Jamaican genetic behavior is to murder people in vehicles that they could never invent with a weapon they could never invent. That's part of the Jamaican mind. But absolutely. Thank you very much, Astralis 725 Nubian Maxing. All right, then we got Rupert. Rupert says, replay gang here. Is there a stream about another Jamaican Nog who shot up a train and represented himself in court? See you next time, Professor Stack. Yes, there is a stream about that. I forget what it's called, but I feel like that was last year, right? So, yeah, you can find that. I think his name was Michael Brown or something. Wasn't Michael Brown? It might be called Michael Brown Edition or something like that. But yeah. Yep. Yep. Mass murdering nigs, not a new thing. Then we got Gen Exterminator. Oh, we just did that one. Don't we have another one? All right, Gen Exterminator says, I worked with a Negro that made a threat at work about coming back with a gun and shooting everyone. I encouraged my coworkers to report him. He was only suspended. If white, he would have been fired. Well, and the FBI would have been called. That's the problem. Is not only do we have it's cliche at this point. Obviously, there's a multi-tier justice system that we're at the bottom of, and that doesn't just apply to getting arrested and facing penalties in court. It applies in the workplace. It applies in social interactions. It applies across the board. That's the way that it is. And it's only going to get worse if we don't do something about it. All right. Then we got, let me see here. Scroll. Horatitis. I don't know. Three different individuals from your notes when you have time to look into them. Charlie Robertson, the mayor of New York, Walter Leroy Moody, and Mark James Robert Essex. All right. Well, I wish you were a little more specific about it, but I'll put that in my notes. Who knows? Maybe I'll be hard up one day and be like, I'm going to Google these names. Thank you very much. Then we got, scroll. Cage Mushinjaro, simply, that icon's too small for me. It looks like the OK sign. Thank you very much. Then we got Helgi23 says, I just got my pilot's license. Well, never take a black passenger up in the air. That's my advice. That's my advice to a new pilot. Keep nigs off the plane. No nigs allowed. That should be a rule on your plane and really just planes generally. People should not be allowed to use technology that people couldn't possibly invent. All right, then we got some more on entropy. We got another big dono on entropy.
Money is power. Money is the only weapon that the Jew has to defend himself with.
Look how Jewy this fag is. All right, Ketzer 88, very generous. Ketzer 88, very generous. And thank you for the O slash. I appreciate the O slash to you, Ketzer 88. O slash to you. Then we got Optimistically Pessimistic. Says, I'll check out the stream later. Keep up the good work. Well, I appreciate that. Now, part of me wants to go look and see if there's ones that I'm missing because I don't want to hear about it. If there is. But I don't know. I'll just look real quick. Let's see. Should be easy to tell. I've got it down to like a science now, almost. Actually, I feel like every time I have to like look it up again. Like, what page is this on? Account. No, actually, it's easier on Entropy to figure it out. Okay. And then, let's see here. Today is the... Well, now it's the 15th. And Wednesday, Outlaws was on the 11th, so it'll be anything on the 12th and beyond. Let's see here. Oh, here's a couple on the 14th, actually. We got I Love Being White. See, it's a good thing I checked here. There's actually a few from I guess, yesterday that I didn't see. I Love Being White says, thanks for covering Croy. The case was more pernicious than I thought. Also a big fan of the gay 90s series. I was born in 2000, so it was already worse by the time I was watching TV. Speaking of the media, though, have you already covered Century of Self, or have you had any plans to? Yes, I have. I think it was like a two-parter. At least one. I think there's two. I don't remember what it was called, but yes, absolutely. We covered that in at least one, possibly two streams quite a while back. Like I think over two years ago, I think. But quite a while. But thank you very much. I Love Being White. Then we got Volkish says, part one, on the first episode of Outlaws, you said you don't think that your streams give people hope, but that isn't true. A long time ago, you made the analogy that just like with bacteria and antibiotics, the more that whites get replaced, the stronger the ones left over will become. That thought is what helps me be hopeful and motivated for the struggle to come. Also, the last few streams have been amazing, and Outlaws is really good too. As always, keep up the great work. Looking forward to tonight's stream and for the next Outlaws episode. Well, I appreciate that, Volkish. And look, that's the way I look at it too, is, yeah, it's going to be rough, and there's going to be a lot of people selected out. And some of those, it's not all good news, right? Because when that happens, some of the people that will get selected out would have been a luxury item. I hate to put it that way, but in a way, right? It's a kind of person that under other circumstances where we had enough of a buffer zone between us and everyone else, our population could be maybe not teeming with these other people, but like we could have these anomalies of, you know, these anomalous white people that maybe spice things up a little bit. But under harsh selection pressures, those people go as well. But that's how, you know, that's how things work. And we'll come out of this a lot stronger. And we'll come out of this with a lot more in-group preference. And it's ultimately, I can't say it's a good thing, but as you say, it's something that there is a silver lining at the very least. Then we got Mr. Skywalker says, I have to admit, Iran and its Middle East allies like Hezbollah have performed better than I expected in this war against the full power of the Zog Empire. Although Iran and Lebanon have taken severe losses, the fact that they are still intact and able to launch missiles and drones is impressive. Iran responded immediately after the surprise attack from Zog on their leadership by hitting expensive American and Israeli military assets. Part of me wonders how the hell IRGC and Hezbollah are still functioning, but then I realized they've been prepping to fight the Zog Empire for decades, with bunkers and missile sites up to over 100 feet underground. Now Trump wants to send Marines and ground troops to take over Karg Island of Iran. I suspect that will go poorly. P.S. It pisses me off seeing the white men and women dying for this Zog war. I understand that Iran is defending itself to survive, but I really wish some of those whites could have been reasoned with instead of being selected out like suckers for Israel. But part of me thinks those whites deserve to be picked off, especially if they were too stupid to listen to reason on not serving Zog. The Arab... How many? you might be breaking a record here tonight, Mr. Skywalker. The Arab and Persian Muslims truly are the better fighters here than European whites. and have far more to offer us than Zionist Jews. I think it's true Europeans are more similar to Persians than to Jews. How do you see this war ending, and how would you, or how do you think it will be before European whites start showing the same will and ideology for survival and morality of the level of the Muslims? Well, they won't in the same way, because, well, part of that's religious. You got to understand, a lot of it's the Arab fanaticism is a lot of the glue that holds that together is religious glue. And just in Iran too, not just the Arabs. So that's something that white people don't have. To the degree that there's any kind of religious fanaticism among whites right now, it's kind of a mixed bag. Much of it is actually helpful to the Jews. You know, there's a lot of Christian Zionists, as an example, that are trying to create the end of the world with this war. So that, you know, it's not exactly great. There's that. And then I would say, they weren't going to like just be demolished overnight. This is something that, you know, speaking of selection pressures, this is a condition that the Iranian people have been living under for decades. And this is something they've been preparing for decades. They knew this day would come, and here it is. I mean, every American president and every American administration has in one way or another essentially threatened Iran. I don't know that Obama did. Obama might not have, or at least not as believably. But I mean, every administration has basically spread the idea that, oh, they just every day they gather around and yell death to America, and one of these days they're going to get a nuke and blah blah blah. You know, that's been like an ongoing theme from the American establishment my entire life. So it was going to happen someday. That said, it's not going to be easy, but I have a hard time thinking that this isn't going to, I don't know. The American military is still massive and way more high tech than what the Iranians have available. So we'll see what happens. I suspect this will go on for a little bit longer, at least. We'll see what happens though. Sorry, my eyes are watering again. Allergies. Grenade says, "Hi, Devin. I sent you an Entropy Hyper Chat last Saturday before the stream, but somehow it seems you never got it. But I still got charged. Could you look? Thanks." Grenade. Let me see. Last Saturday? So it's a good thing I checked on this one. I've got one from you that says, "Love the new show, especially chuckled at the candle." Oh, I thought I remember reading that one, though. Let me look if there's no one before that. It's not there. The one I've got from you is, "Love the new show, especially chuckled at the candle Negro Slayer bit. Don't mind the hate. Can't tell if genuine from some Rebecca haters. You guys should do a dive on Rodney King and his handlers." Maybe I didn't read that one. I don't remember that. Rodney King, I think we've sort of covered before. I don't know how in depth we got. I'd have to think about that. But yeah, I don't think we definitely didn't deep dive into it. Definitely didn't deep dive into that. I think that's the one that you're talking about, because I don't see anything else there, Grenade. But thank you very much, and thank you for the compliment on the show. All right, let's see here. Then we got... Here we are. Okay, now we're caught up with what actually came through. Okay. All right, then we got one more from 1488. It says, Gypsy Crusader, real name Paul Miller, had a fight with a nigger tonight and won. Not by knockout, though. The greasy nigger did what they always do. When they start talking or taking hits, they lean forward and hug the guy they're fighting. That's what makes boxing boring. I remember when I was a kid and I was like, I hate sports ball, but maybe I'll like boxing. You know, at least that's just like it's two guys beating each other up. And then when I realized that most of boxing is just like two guys hugging, I was like, okay, I guess I don't like this either. But yeah, I'd seen something about that. I didn't know that was like an actual fight. I didn't know that was like a thing going down. Maybe I'll look at that. I've been exceptionally busy, guys, with like the B stuff and some other stuff that will, well, in the new show, and then just some other stuff that's that someday you guys will learn about. Not like in a bad way. That sounded cryptic.
Someday you guys will. Someday the truth will be revealed.
it's nothing bad. Anyway, I just haven't. I haven't been on the internet much. I haven't been. If I'm not preparing for a show or something like that, I haven't been like addicted to the news. I haven't been doom scrolling. I just haven't had time for it. So I saw that. I thought it was something like, I couldn't tell like if it was like a meme or if it was like, oh, really, they're really going to do it. But I thought it was going to be like in the future, but all right. There we go. We got boxing. I can think of some people I'd like to box. All right. Then we got Optimistically Pessimistic says, once I took a job application a few years back to a small Indian reservation with a casino. Much of the res looked like the black part of town. Yeah. Anyone that's, never been to an Indian reservation. Well, I mean, you're not missing out on it. It's not the worst thing to never have been on an Indian reservation. All right, then we got ex-field marshal says, is there an Outlaws t-shirt yet? There will be. In fact, there's going to be a Rufel t-shirt soon. I just have to make them. See, this is the workload pile up that I got. Once I get into the groove, it's not going to be like this, but like, there's a lot of stuff you have to do when you start a new project. The initial setup, throws some things out of whack. So I just got to get back into a routine and look, I've been slacking on my shirts. Like the last shirt that I've made was months ago. So I got to revamp everything on the merch scene. So that'll be coming out soon. The Shogun says, sorry, I have no money. Well, you at least have some money, right? That's good. But have you seen what Tommy Robinson said about Mark Collette while on Russell Brand's show and possibly what Mark said in response? No, I didn't see it. And I don't know now because you didn't tell me. I could guess. I can guess that Tommy Robinson said he's an evil racist. And I can guess that Mark said he's a Jewish shill. And Mark would be the one that's right. So, I don't know, though. You'd have to tell me. That's my guess, just based on what you said. Ghost Dog Man says, I hear Super Chat is the best bang for your buck. I don't see you have it. Rumble charges like 50%, Entropy 30%. Is Super Chat just 5%? Worth checking out. LP told me that. What is that, like another platform? I'll look at it later. I'll take a look at it. We could use something different maybe. I'd have to look at their interface, and I don't know if they'll ban you. Maybe not. If LP's using it, I mean, he's not as edgy as I am, but he gets there sometimes. All right, I think that's everything. Let me double check here. All right. Oh, should I check the... Should I check if I missed the Rumble ones? Just to be on the safe side. I'll check. It'll just take a second. Well, actually, this is the one I always get lost in their interface because it sucks. Got a dashboard. Stats, maybe? No. Count overview. It's always in the dumbest place, yeah. It's count overview. Okay. And then same date. So 12th and beyond is what we're looking for. Does it give the dates? Oh, I don't think it does. It gives the dates. Yeah, I don't think we missed any, but I can't be sure. It looks like we're good on Rumble. Actually, I think we are good. All right, then we got... excuse me. So I'm telling you, the allergies are getting bad. I meant to start actually taking Claritin or something. Cypher says, read the Brigade. Read the Brigade. Is that a book? The Brigade? I don't know if that's a book, but Cypher wants you to read the Brigade. All right, guys. Well, that's it. That's all we got for tonight. Like I said, we'll be back here on Saturday, 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. Pacific time. But we'll be on the Outlaws high noon Pacific time on Wednesday. So I'll see you guys there. In the meantime, for Blackpilled, I am, of course, Devin Stagg.
This guy comes to my house. He's a Satanist from one of the Satanist churches here where they sacrifice babies and melt those babies into candles, their skin, and that's supposed to give them more demonic power. And these Satanists came to my house, five of them, and threatened my life.